Blog Talk Radio.
Outlined against a blue-gray sky, the horsemen ride again. Yes, Grantland see the Irish shine, the time has come to win. In the bowl of around the spirits stir, and you feel a shiver when the horsemen herd comes thundering by, and the Irish rise again.
Hello, everybody up there in Doomer Land. Welcome to Down the Line on the TNNDN Network. I know it's been a while, but I promise we haven't forgotten about you. No, Tim Daniel here. Excited to be back on the air, talking a lot of big things here this week. Let's go ahead and bring in our panel. I know it's been a while, and I hope you haven't forgotten about us, because we're still here, like I said, starting with the godfather of the new ND Nation, Mr. Jason Cripe.
Hello again, everyone. Yes, it has been a minute since we've been on the air, but glad to say that we are back, and we've had a little bit of family life and things kind of kept us off the air for a minute, but we are back and ready to bring you all the day's events and news from Notre Dame football and other sporting teams with Notre Dame as well, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, welcome back here. I know even the last time you was on, you were in the NYC, but now we have you back home and hanging with us. Stephen Herring. Steve, how are you?
I am awesome. It is great to be back. And, wow, a lot has happened since I was on the airwaves. So we'll try not to give too many updates of stuff that I know that anyone listening has already heard about. But, you know, excited to talk with you guys about some of the developments for the football team as well as some of the things in Domer land. So let's do it.
So just a quick recap of the world of spring and reviewing there. I know we talked a little spring football our last time we were on the air. We've had the NFL draft since then where Notre Dame showed out, having seven guys drafted, a couple guys got getting signed to rookie free agent deals. So, you know, definitely good job with this class there. And then kind of we're going to start here today, actually. We're going to get you ready for the 2016 season. As I said a few weeks ago, we're about to start our sixth season of covering Notre Dame football. That is insane. When we started the show, there was no such thing as AstroTurf in the stadium. There was no idea that anyway in hell the stadium was going to be a Jumbotron. The Sharebox series was just starting. A lot has changed in our 6 years. So we're now going into this year where, they're looking like they're going to be a really solid football team as we expect. I saw today Pete Sands from Irish Illustrated kind of posted the schedule. And it looks like by the look of things, there's only one game that Notre Dame at this point is not favored to win, and that's the last game of the year in Los Angeles against USC, where they're currently listed as 4-point underdogs. Their lowest win probability is currently week one against Texas at 59%. Their highest win probability is November 12th against Army at 97%. So, Jason, as we get through a relatively healthy spring football, there are a lot of losses to the NFL draft and graduation. What do you think looking forward, man? What are you excited to see? Obviously, I know everyone's going to want to talk about quarterback, because that's all there is to discuss in Notre Dame, apparently. What do you think so far, man, as we get ready for this year?
I really think that everything is coming together. I think Brian Kelly has developed the guy's been around for a while, but he's developed a kind of a culture within Notre Dame football. These guys are – it's all for one for all. These guys, the next man in philosophy is still intact. I'm not going to talk about quarterbacks because, frankly, it really doesn't. It's not even a talking point right now because we don't know anything more than what we knew in the spring game. So defensively, I think Notre Dame returns some good guys. I think they've got some very, very explosive talent, especially in the secondary. I think that one thing I'm really looking forward to is seeing the progression of C.J. Sanders in the return game, and then also he's going to take on a role as possibly a wide receiver, slot receiver, something in that fashion. I think just going off the spring game, man, we've got a punt team our kicker, man, that kid drops bombs. I mean, it's like watching, Tiger Woods or whatever your favorite golfer is, drop one 5 feet from the pin and just roll it right back. And it just sits right where he wants it. This kid's got talent. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff going on with Notre Dame football. And obviously, as we get into fall camp, we'll start to learn more. But, you know, that's just the, you know, my perusal of what's going on at this point.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And, Steve, you know, kind of bring you in here to the conversation real quick. I think the big thing is, you know, there is some concern with this loss. It's how does Notre Dame replace all these guys they lose? I mean, how do you replace the Jalen Smiths with how do you replace the Joe Schmitz as far as the intelligence on the field, the Sheldon days? For a team that had a pretty weak secondary already, you still lose three or four guys from that secondary through the draft and graduation on the defensive side. On the offensive side, you do lose your big playmaker in Will Fuller. You do lose C.J. Procise, but you know you have a lot of grit standing there with Josh Adams and Dexter Williams. So, man, you know, with all this loss there, it's still, you know, you've seen the depth that Brian Kelly has built over the past couple of seasons. How do you feel about this team replacing those talents?
Well, look, I mean, we talked about this a lot, and he has recruited incredibly well, and as showcased by now, he's regularly cranking out multiple first, second, third round draft picks in the NFL draft. That's likely going to be the case again next year. Mike McGlinchey may be one of the top two or three tackles in the country, and the NFL draft again. And he's doing a great job, and I kind of want to veer back towards, you know, looking over the formal schedule announcement for 2016. And one thing we haven't had a chance to talk about here, we're doing a Sunday tip-off at night to open the year in Austin.
Nice.
That's a big deal. I mean, I know the traditionalists want to go, you know, whatever. We're all very liberal on this show when it comes to the movement of this Fighting Irish football program, and there's no NFL game. They're going to get prime time to themselves on the road, bright lights in Texas. I think this is a huge win for the program. And I'm super pumped about it. And, you know, if they were playing Michigan State or Stanford or SoCal the next week and they only have 5 days to prepare instead of six, I'd be a little bit more worried. But they take on the Nevada back 6 days or 6 days later at home. And I think this makes a lot of sense for everyone involved in the program. And it continues them to push out and be out in the forefront of college football whenever the opportunity arises. And now that those high school kids and their dads and their moms and, you know, people around the world get a chance to see Notre Dame in prime time. So super pumped about that. I'm not pumped about thinking the reality is Charlie Strong's third edition of Texas football is going to be a lot better than the second one.
Yes.
That's my opinion. That's a million years away.
And I would piggyback off that a little bit. I think that maybe what Notre Dame, what we're seeing with this Sunday primetime game, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but the Shamrock Series in 2017 is not happening. And I'm wondering if a tool that Notre Dame may be trying to pick up on and have one of these primetime, this is the only football game on, it's Sunday, what else are you going to do? You know, maybe that's something that they're looking at getting some exclusive, you know, primetime stuff all of themselves. And, you know, especially in the state of Texas, as big as football is, I think that may be something. I don't know that for sure. It's just speculation. But I can kind of see that maybe that's where this is transitioning into going away from the Shamrock Series. Because, frankly, guys, I think it's gotten stale. It's the same opponents. It's a lot of the same venues. So I'm not sure that that's going to continue into the 2018 season even.
Maybe so. I mean, the Texas move is really cool, especially like, you know, we've seen Notre Dame do some cool things that will start the week one before. Obviously, if you go back, you know, back to the year they played in the national championship, they were the only team on at 9 a.m. when they were playing Navy in Dublin, Ireland. So, it's a cool thing, you know, and it's a really exciting thing. Like I said, you're not competing with the NFL, like Steve mentioned. You're playing a Texas team you have to expect is going to be much improved from what they were when we saw them play last year. You know, obviously with the talent they're getting there, Charlie Strong getting his guys in. He's done a good job of really weeding out the people that shouldn't be there and really putting his stamp on things. And you have to respect that for sure. So, yeah, man, I think it's a really cool thing to start the year. And I'm with you, Steve. You know, I'm not 100% concerned about 6 days off of that playing Nevada. And that's a pretty nice thing there too. But yeah, I mean, if you look at this all together, the home games this year are a lot of fun. You have Michigan State that third week. You have Cuse. You have Stanford. Miami, who, you know, Mark Richt is doing a hell of a job putting that program together in his first year and getting guys on the field and getting and making things happen. You have the Army game as your Shamrock Series. You have Va-Tech. A lot of things to be excited about in South Bend this year for sure.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this schedule, this is so hard, and I've written about this before when I used to write, and, you know, trying to project the SoCal game is an absolute joke. When you're trying to think, the last few years, Notre Dame has been so injured, and then the years before that, we've had, you know, Matt Barkley get injured the week of the game, and that changed the dynamic of the Notre Dame USC game. They have firings middle of the year. That is so far away. That is Thanksgiving weekend, you guys,
yep,
of 2016. We got Labor Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Halloween. Everything is going to happen before that. We have the whole summer before the even first kickoff. So it's hard to project, but this schedule seems a little bit more navigatable than previous.
Yes.
And our biggest names on there, so we lost, you know, last year. The two losses in the regular season were the teams that finished number 3 and number 4 in the poll. So Stanford, Clemson. Clemson off the schedule. They're going to be unreal this year. But we get Stanford, middle of the year, post Kevin Hogan. We get Michigan State still trying to figure out what they're doing after Connor Cook has left for the NFL. You know, the schedule looks right now shaping up. If Notre Dame's quarterback situation feels its way out, they're going to be able to score some points, and they're going to probably put up some wins that maybe even look better than they really were. Michigan State in September maybe look like a big win that everyone points to then, and maybe Michigan State's, you know, 5-5 in November, and it looks pretty good when it happened, but who cares? So
right,
the schedule shapes really nicely.
Well,
it looks like a year Notre Dame should be favored in every game but one.
I'll go on a limb and say this right now. I don't think anyone should be sleeping on Nevada. From what I'm reading and what I've heard, this team is much improved. They've got some great athletes. So I'm a little bit more concerned probably than you guys are with that one less day and a road game, and then come back and play Nevada. They look like they could be tough. So that may be a closer game than what we might think
are
right now.
Saying,
again,
Irish assistant Brian Pullian is putting together a nice little.
That is the word around the campfire in the South Bend area. Yes, that Brian Pullian has put together a nice squad, and he's got he may have something going on here. So I mean, that obviously that remains to be seen. But that's just what I'm hearing locally.
Remember when Charlie White shut out a Nevada Wolfpack team led by Kevin Kaepernick or Colin Kaepernick? 35-0.
Yeah.
We had Jimmy Clausen on our end, and like after that game, I was like, "Holy shit, that kid might win the Heisman."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
About that.
Hey, man.
Hey, no way. First of all, let's back it up. I'm like the biggest Jimmy Clausen homer ever. His junior year at Notre Dame is one of the best, if not the best, year in the history of the program. It was unreal. I love Jimmy Clausen, and he was right to leave when they had Brian Kelly. He had to look at the situation and go, I'm not going to be able to run a brand new spread offense in a year and be able to promote myself to the NFL draft. That guy was a second round pick. He got paid. He's still getting paid.
Yeah, he is. He had to start this year for the Ravens.
And the Bears this year.
Yep, and the Bears.
That's right. Yeah, he played Seattle twice for two different teams.
Mm-hmm. Not
you Jason, want. You're right over there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Off the schedule, I think that we definitely should talk a little bit more about the NFL draft. And I don't know, guys did the podcast before the draft, so you know all those 7 picks on the free agent signings. I'll say this. I want to open the topic up. I thought that Jalen Smith had a good chance to go in the first round, but everyone who said there was conspiracy with his doctor performing the surgery, being the Cowboys doctor, and they probably knew something that no one else did. Man, did that play out just like a lot of people conspired it did. Unreal to see him go. That was the second round. And I don't know if he was top 100 prospects on a lot of guys' draft boards with a knee issue. What was your guys' reaction? You were there. What was your reaction to Jalen Smith's name called?
I was actually on my way back that day. I went for the first round. But mm-hmm. I was watching on my phone and, you know, kind of seeing people around that day, you know, he was a kind of a big talk between fans. Like he was signing that, he was signing the day of the first round actually in Chicago, and, him and Shaq Lawson were together signing. And, you know, you can kind of see a lot of stuff going out. And that morning, Adam Schefter put a tweet out saying that there are a lot of people that expect Jalen Smith will go in the first round. He's like, you know, reports are coming back a little better than what expected. You know, there are those people that feel like he could play, and they're like, you know, there are some teams that could see him going in the first round. So I'm kind of sitting there in the first round, and those trades are kind of happening. You're seeing these linebackers go, like Leonard Floyd goes to the Bears with the 9th pick. And you're like, okay, so Jalen's not going to go that high. Obviously, that makes sense. I, for a second, did not think about Paxton Lynch when I was sitting there. So when the trade happens, when Denver trades up with Seattle, I'm like, holy hell, Von Miller and Jalen Smith together, that's going to be pretty sweet when he's healthy. For some reason, did not think of Paxton Lynch in that moment. So, yeah, I mean, I was obviously not surprised that he didn't go in the first round, but it was cool to kind of see the buzz. Like, he was literally the most interesting name in the draft that week, even with Miles Jack going through basically the same thing.
Well, now you want to hear conspiracy-type theories. I've been waiting to tell you guys this, and I've held off until now since we're on the air. Now, I have a friend, an actual good friend, who was also in the draft. He was red carpet. I'm not dropping names. Red carpet guy. I mean, he was, you know, he knows some people. The conspiracy theory. Who's the cat that got his? I'm using air quotes if that helps. Got his phone hacked and his bong pictures.
Larry Tunsil.
Yeah. The conspiracy theory around the campfire with people I've talked to are saying that it was Ronnie Stanley who actually put those out there.
What?
That's what people are saying. Now, do I believe it or not? I don't know. But, yeah.
Are you serious?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That's so dumb.
Oh, I know. That's what people are saying.
Really, really.
I was like, well, first of all, how would Ronnie Stanley, unless that dude left his phone sitting out somewhere he shouldn't have? And I don't see Ronnie Stanley doing that. I don't know. It's like, you know, it's like the Big Lebowski, like Lennon said. look to see who benefits, and you know. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there. That's something I heard. As soon as I heard it, I just kind of rolled my eyes and went, "Are you kidding me? Come on." So.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Really, it's completely dumb. I figured you guys would think that. That's what I thought too. I was like, "Really? No, come on, that didn't happen."
Nah, that's probably some bitter Ole Miss person that was like, "Why does Stanley go before Tunsil? He's not as good as Tunsil," and all that bullshit, and that's probably what that was.
More than likely. Oh, yeah. I don't put any credence into it at all. I don't think it happened. That is just something that people were talking about, and there are people who are kind of high-end and, red carpet types, and I'm like, really?
Well,
carpet type like in South Bend, Indiana? Like, red carpet's
right.
Another name, or red carpet's of, like, national pop culture?
Not national pop culture, but national politically connected, like United States political system connected type somebody is where this came from.
Speaking of that, funny story when I'm at the draft. So I was in the fourth row at the draft. Somehow I pulled off that miracle. And
nice.
I turned around and I'm like kind of looking to see who's all around me. Like it's just a bunch of fans I'm thinking. And Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, is the row right behind me. And I'm like, oh, cool. And like, I was like telling people, I didn't realize that he's like the most unliked person in that city. That was
nobody likes him in Chicago.
Yeah,
not
so much. Yeah, I learned that pretty fast. Yeah.
Yeah. Chicagoans are not a big fan of the Rahm.
But to go back, let's talk a little bit more about it, man. First off, let's start at the beginning. Ryan Kelly gets his first top 10 draft pick. Notre Dame has their first top 10 draft pick since, 92, I think they said it was, since Rick Meyer, I think, with Ronnie Stanley going to Baltimore. I'm not, you know, a draft expert or guru by any stretch, but I did even before the video came out, had Stanley rated higher than Tunsil, and no, not just because I'm a Notre Dame fan. I just thought he was a better all-around athlete and pro player as far as, like, what he brought to the table, so I think Baltimore definitely made the right move there, especially for a team that really struggled on the offensive line. I think Will Fuller's going to an awesome situation in Houston where, you know, he's going to take some pressure off DeAndre Hopkins. They go and get Braxton Miller in the third round, where basically this team's going to run speed, like run fly routes all the time, and people still aren't going to keep up with them. But to tell you honestly, you know, I love Jalen going to Dallas. I think he'll do well there when he's healthy and ready to play. I think the two third-round guys got the best situation of any of them. I think C.J. Prosise going to Seattle, who just lost Marshawn Lynch, who is expecting Thomas Rawls to be their number one running back, is in an excellent situation. I think that, you know, he's going to be there. And I expect Kevari Russell to start day one in Kansas City. I think him and Marcus Peters are going to be their starting corners. And I think that those two are going to be an awesome tandem for years to come.
I would agree. I think that's a good assessment. I think that those third-round guys ended up really well. CJ's in a great position, like you said, with the loss of Marshawn Lynch, and then you got Kevari. You know, his potential, I don't believe, was ever really reached in Notre Dame, and he admitted as much, that he didn't work as hard as he probably should have. In his last season, he did get it together, but I think – that his ceiling is a lot higher than we can even imagine in the NFL. I mean, it's going to, you know, obviously it's a transition from college to pro, but I would agree that he's going to be on that starting roster from day one.
I will play the advocate here. I don't think Kevari Russell, based on his performance last year, is a starting day one NFL cornerback unless he got a lot better. I believe he had a starting NFL cornerback athletic ability and instincts. But, man, you guys, he got burned a very uncomfortable amount of times last year within the Notre Dame scheme. Do you want to blame Van Gorder's scheme? I don't think so. I don't want to.
No.
He's in man-to-man too much. So I believe that third round was right where he should have been because the ceiling was high character guy, despite that nonsense suspension, which I'm getting to the point where the more I learned about it, the more I went, we really burned 1 and 2 years of kids' careers for this nonsense.
Right.
Anyways, I think that's perfect. But Prosise is intriguing because they, you know, not only did they lose Marshawn Lynch, but Thomas Rawls, who came in and was, you know, powering through, he tore up his knee. So he walks into a really phenomenal depth chart situation. And hopefully the Seahawks can manage him because Notre Dame, once they started getting him over 15 to 18 carries a game, his body didn't hold up. He's a guy that needs to get 8 to 12 carries and 3 to 5 catches.
Yeah.
I don't think his body can do more than that in the NFL, but man, he's a freak. And by the way, the steal of the draft all day, every day was Sheldon Day. Fourth round, that guy has first round talent.
I couldn't believe he dropped as far as he did. That was surprising.
It blew my mind.
Dude,
I'm sorry. I watched Nick Martin and Sheldon Day play every day for 4 years. You will never, for one billionth of a second, convince me that Sheldon Day is not a better D tackle than Nick Martin is a center.
I agree.
No. Not agree.
Dude, not only that, look what the Jaguars did in that draft. They get Sheldon Day in the fourth round, and that's awesome. But you get Jalen Ramsey, who I thought between him and Ezekiel Elliott, you could say 1A and 1B on who was the best player in the draft. Jalen Smith's healthy. Miles Jack's healthy. I maybe have a different list there. I mean, then they go to the second round and get Miles Jack. Then you get Sheldon Day. Like, the Jaguars, they own the damn draft this year.
I mean, I feel
their
bad
front office
for Sheldon.
Is good.
Okay, whoa. When's the last time they won 5 games?
I know.
In the draft.
They had a good
draft
day.
Wise.
Not a good year or decade. 4 or 5 years. They're still in the AFC South, and they've got to take on, you know, the revamped Texans and Andrew Luck. And I'm trying to remember who else is in that division. Anyways, back to Sheldon Day. I feel bad about him at this point because he lost a lot of money, and that guy did all the things right. He stayed in school the extra year. He got better each and every year as a player. And again, he went through phases, and I've said this on the show almost every episode we've ever had since Sheldon Day stepped on campus. He could take over a game at times at the defensive tackle, defensive end position. And you can't say that about many players. He could take over a game for stretches.
Yep.
I hope there's a guy that gets to play 2 years, falls out, and they sign him to a big multi-year deal. extension, but really bummed out for how far he fell.
Yeah, well, it was a bummer.
If you're looking at the, I mean, and this is, you know, this is neither here nor there. It doesn't really make a difference at all, but I was just, I saw some numbers, and the top 10 list for rookie contract values by school, Ohio State, about $117.5 million. Number two,
Notre Dame.
Just north of $51 million. So that's pretty impressive. Third was Alabama, then followed by Florida and Clemson. So
you are looking at the same webpage on UND.com that I am.
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, you got to think, man. Look at that Fiesta Bowl. 19 kids from the Fiesta Bowl were drafted in this year's NFL draft. 19 kids from one game that wasn't a college football playoff, that wasn't a national championship. So it had 19 kids. Like, that tells you, like, what those two programs are putting on the field and, you know, developing. You got to give price to Urban Meyer and Brian Kelly for that, for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about the undrafted guys. Of the undrafted Irish players, what was which one most surprised you? For me, it's
Chris Brown.
I thought that Ishaq Williams had a better chance to be drafted than Chris Brown. Chris Brown got better every year, but he's a tweener on speed and size and his hands, everything on him. Nothing was super elite, and he never was like a guy that took over a game in college. It wasn't like that was the Chris Brown game. What's the Chris Brown game? How many Will Fuller games were there? There were even, you know, there's plenty of other examples. But Ishaq Williams, there was that tantalizing mix of, look at this insane like size and athletic ability, plus did Notre Dame not develop him, plus he's been out of football 2 years. How does he not get drafted? No, not how did he got. I'm not surprised he wasn't drafted, but I'm more surprised with him than I was with Chris Brown.
And that's fair. But for me, I mean, you're right. You know, Chris Brown never had that game where you're like, man, he had those flings. I mean, he had the highlights. He had the Boston College catch. He had games like that. But, and, you know, the Oklahoma catch his freshman year. But, yeah, there was never that ultimate game. My surprise was the athleticism, if it not be the height, you know. And that's where I was shocked Chris Brown didn't get drafted. You know, because I thought with that speed, with his jumping ability, you know, people were going to want that in the draft. I didn't think in any way that he was going to be some guy that went, like, the fourth or fifth round by any stretch. But, like, for Michael Thomas, not the Ohio State Michael Thomas, the Southern Miss Michael Thomas to be taken, for Cody Core to be drafted, like, I always thought Chris Brown was better than those guys.
I mean, is he better than that, was it the German kid that never played organized American football? I don't know, that guy's like 6'4", ran a 4.4.
Right. But, like, when you watch those
he looks like a linebacker.
Like, right. Everyone else is like 5'4".
I mean, forget the game tape. I'm just talking about measurables here, which is like why Ishaq Williams, I thought, had a better chance to get drafted. Because you can put a guy that's 6'6" and 270 pounds, runs a 4.75. You go, we can find a way to play with this kid. We can put him on special teams day one, and he'll do things, and we can, you know, throw him in a rush end, and we'll figure it out. But, another thing I like where Elijah Shumay ended up.
Yeah, I do,
and
too.
That's a good fit.
Tampa. I was
about to say that.
I think he has a good chance to make that team. He'll be he could very well develop into a David Bruton type. Special teams, wizard, and part-time dime nickelback, very valuable cog in a good team.
Well, they were talking about him after their rookie camp, how, like, impressive he was. And, like, you know, he was making highlights and making plays. So, yeah, like, I mean, Tampa already seems to take a liking to him, which is nice for him, obviously. I'll tell you what, you know, for how little the Giants drafted as far as DNs, and I know they had a pretty decent, you know, offseason with the signings they made. I really like Romeo Okorah's fit with the G-men. I think that that's a good fit for him.
Yeah, no, again, that's a revamp, you know, defensive line that needs to make some plays. I like that. I like that. I don't love Chris Brown in Dallas. Again, I don't think that's a great fit.
I don't either.
What if Chris Brown beats out Jalen Smith's brother for the last wide receiver slot? How's that working?
Well, they're actually apparently Dallas is using Rod for a fullback now is their game plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amir Carlisle and Matthias Farley both land in Arizona. They'll be hanging out with Troy Nicholas and Michael Floyd. I mean, look, what did you guys think? I remember we talked about this already. Matthias Farley puts up NFL draft-type measurables from size, speed at the pro day. Do you expect him to make a squad?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. Maybe
53 guys make a squad each year.
Yeah, but I was
a little – I don't know if I was, you know, really too surprised that Matthias wasn't drafted, but I think that he's going to be a great fit. So he's going to fit in someplace. His measurables are awesome. I don't really know what it was about the scouts that kind of downplayed him, but, I mean, I know that he had some issues, but all in all, I mean, that guy is what you want on a team as a team leader because he really can be that kind of guy.
Yeah,
he can be, but you
want
to know why he doesn't get the love from scouts. He never found a legitimate starting role at Notre Dame where he locked in. He wasn't a corner. He wasn't a safety. He wasn't a linebacker.
That's true.
He was this flex, which, again, you can find a niche role in the NFL, no doubt about it. I don't know. We'll see. I have a feeling those guys have got an uphill road, both Amir and Matthias. Same with Jared Grace. I hope Jared Grace works out. I hope he's really healed up. That'd be crazy.
Let's not forget about Jared Grace. I mean, that kid, you know, he's going to the Bears, and that's really the only thing I have to be happy about with the Bears right now, I think. So, yay! Bear down. Jackasses.
Bear down?
Yeah.
What is this? That's Arizona, bro.
The Bears use that, too.
They use bear down? They stole it from the Wildcats?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The Bears have always said that, haven't they? I don't know. No one cares.
As long as I've known them, too. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I don't really like the fit for Chris Brown either, only because, like, obviously there's the obvious, the Dez Bryant and things like that, but, like, is Chris Brown going to make your team over Devin Street? And I love Chris Brown, and I'm a fan of him, and I enjoyed having him on our show, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that can fit into that scheme there.
You got Dez Bryant, you have Devin Street, you have Terrence Williams.
Yeah,
little white guy whose name I don't have remember right now.
Cole Beasley,
little white guy.
Well, you know, Chris Brown, he's a hell of a dancer, and he's always got a music career to fall back on. Or is that a different Chris Brown?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Sorry, had to go there, had to do it.
Yeah, so we're gonna
just
move
Chris
on
Brown and kick Rihanna in the face. I'm sorry, what?
So Everett Golson's been to two rookie camps already. Yeah, Everett Golson tried out for the Colts and the Eagles already.
He belongs. He belongs in Seattle.
He does, man. He's like, he is Tavares Jackson. Like, he might be a shorter version of Tavares Jackson.
Or a shorter version of Russell Wilson.
Is he shorter than Russell Wilson? Not by much.
They're both listed at 6 foot or 5'11 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and Steve, you and I have both stood right next to Everett Golson. Is he 5'11? Because I was more like, 5'10.
Maybe. I mean, he's been measured at some legitimate statistics. But yeah, I believe that he has a skill set not unlike many NFL players. And he could make a backup role for a team that says, well, we don't, the drop off from a skill standpoint isn't a whole lot for a Russell Wilson or what's the guy up in Buffalo? Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a shot. I mean, I think he'll be in camp with somebody. I don't know who, if he's already on his second team, but I think he'll definitely, we know he has NFL arm strength, and we know he has NFL athleticism to play that position, you know, and it comes back to the football, you know, the football decisions he made. It comes back to, I don't know, what would you say his accuracy is, like,
I'd say it's fair to middling, more closer to better than middling, but it's in there.
look at those Florida State games. Like, I understand he had Dalvin Cook behind him, but, like, he only had one horrible throwing game. Like, he just didn't throw a lot because he didn't have to. He had Dalvin Cook behind him.
Hmm. Yeah. I just don't think he's got the arm strength. Golson?
No. Dude, Golson has a cannon, bro.
Who are you comparing Golson to?
Dude, Everett Golson.
Malik Zaire, Deshaun Kaiser, Brandon Wimbush.
Okay, he has
they
a way stronger arm than Malik.
Yes.
You think so?
Dude,
I never know. I
he
don't
know. He is not accurate with it, but Everett has a gun.
Well, okay, he's not accurate with it. Then I don't give a damn what your arm strength is if you can't connect with a target. That means
that's
nothing.
Well, that's a different conversation. You just said he didn't have the arm strength. The arm accuracy, correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't lump that part into it. But yeah. I don't care how far you can throw the ball. If you can't hit the broadside of a barn or waterfall of a boat, what good does that do you? You're an intermediate passing quarterback, and maybe you can run. But Everett didn't like to run either, remember?
Yeah. I mean, I thought he had some pretty nice running plays at his time here.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll
admit,
right, I agree. But that third quarter against Arizona State that he had, I'll never forget that game. I know they lost, but Jesus, that third quarter, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, he had,
fair enough. I'll give you that.
I mean, he had some big-time moments, big-time games, big-time throws. I'm never going to hate on Golson yet.
No, man. I mean, they lost that Florida State game, but he was unbelievable in that game, minus that one interception.
Yeah. I mean, the scheme was set up well, and they had a great opportunity. I'm not a big Golson fan. I'm sure you guys already know this. Just not a big fan.
Yeah, as a freshman, his completion percentage was 58.8. Not bad for, you know, his first year. And went up a tick as when he came back from suspension. So 2014, he completed 60% of his throws. In a year where he threw over 100 more passes, 3,400 yards, 14 picks. So, and then, I mean, this is crazy. At FSU, his completion percentage was 67. That's legit. And 11 TDs and 3 picks. I guess I don't remember his numbers being this good. It must have been he must have piled up some stuff against bad teams.
Yeah.
But
well, he like, because I mean, there was the one game he got hurt.
Yeah, no, he had 300 yards and 4 touchdowns against Texas State to open the year.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But he didn't throw his first pick at Florida State until week 8.
Yeah.
Only threw 3.
Did he play against Clemson?
No, he did not play against Clemson.
Yeah, because I know he
got
in the bowl game.
Benched after the loss to Georgia Tech, which he was 20 for 30 with no touchdowns.
Dalvin Cook.
So I guess the moral of the story is inconsistent. Maybe that's why he's not looked at as well as maybe people think he should be. Inconsistent.
No, I still think he ends up in camp somewhere. I don't know if he makes
probably.
A team from there, but he ends up in someone's camp.
Well, yeah, I think anyone would be silly not to give the kid a chance at, you know, in a camp and see what he can do. But you know, we'll see what happens. I know, hey, I'm not hating on Everett. Love the kid. I met him a few times, interviewed him. Good dude. You know, best of luck, dude. But I just don't see it.
So these, like, next year, on these, like, 2017, like, mock draft / big board things we see, is Deshaun Kaiser going to be on these things? Because technically he can go after this season.
Woof. That's going to depend. I mean, that's all going to depend on who becomes the starter, you know, who's named the starter. If Malik Zaire's name is the starter, then no, I don't think you see Deshaun Kaiser's name on anybody's big board. He's not going anywhere. He wouldn't have enough of a body of work.
I 100% disagree with that because Cardale Jones got drafted in the 4th round, and he played 10
for
games
Ohio
for
State.
Ohio State. 10 games at most. I get he played in the national championship, but, like, yeah. And he was really inconsistent his last year there. And I think Deshaun Kaiser is a much better passer than Cardale Jones.
No, and he very – I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I'm just saying that I think if you're if you're going to go from the money aspect of a draft, this is where you go from as a kid. You go, okay, I can come out after the 2016 season. Now, I've only got one season of college football under my belt. How much money am I going to lose if I stick around a year and start? They're going to get a lot more money.
Made a lot of money from 1 year in college.
Yeah, well, that's...
Yeah,
not
that's not
say the word
that's
I want to
say. Right there.
Yeah.
So, I guess while we're on that, you get your guys' thoughts here real quick before we kind of move on here. Brian Kelly obviously was in Chicago. He was at the draft of Ronnie Stanley. You know, he's in the big board. He was on ESPN every day talking to teams why they should draft Jalen Smith. And first off, props to Notre Dame and props to Brian Kelly for being all, like, active on Twitter throughout the whole draft every time one of their players was picked. Like, makes the program look really good. I thought that was really awesome how they did that.
Yeah. They're really utilizing digital media as they should be, and it worked out well.
Yeah,
hats
totally.
Off for sure.
Steve, I'll bring you back in this conversation here because this is kind of the things here. So if you saw the day of the draft on SportsCenter, Kelly's on there, and they ask about the quarterback competition, obviously. And they ask him, they say, whichever guy you pick, will you have a game plan to play the other guy? And he said, no, this team will have one leader. Now, we had Tyler James on a couple weeks ago. He made the point that I kind of saw what he said. He said, I think DeShone Kizer will be the starter. I think he wins the job, which I agree with that. He said, but I think they have to find a way to play Malik Zaire.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts there? Like, I mean, Steve, we'll start with you, man. How do you feel that has to play out? Like, I mean, I agree. Like, they're both kids are so talented. Like, I feel like that. You know, I feel like there's got to be somehow, some way that Malik Zaire can help your football team on the field.
I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think the sky is the limit for what DeShone Kizer could do if he gets better all offseason and each and every week as a football player. He could be considered the best quarterback in America next year, hands down. I do believe that as a fact. People have been calling me out on Twitter when I said I think that next year DeShone Kizer will be listed on some really smart people's mock drafts in the top 10 for next year because he can come out after this year. And he might, and I wouldn't blame him. And then we're back to square one. Malik Zaire will have maybe 2 years eligibility left with, along with Brandon Wimbush, who could have three if they're able to redshirt him this year. Back to, you know, very important and fun problems to have. How do you work in Malik Zaire with DeShone Kizer? I don't know. Do you – DeShone's biggest weakness this past year, red zone offense? Do you have a red zone package for Malik when you're really taking one of the best players in America off the field and not allowing him to get better, which makes your offense better? And he's a great runner in itself. So, you know, limiting his growth in that one area is a tough pill to swallow if you're trying to grow a program. But I do agree that there's some fit there that you could put Malik in, and he could be used as a tool and a weapon. Is he a Hines Ward or a Cordell Stewart or, you know, one of these flex guys that can play a couple days? I'm not sure. We've got a lot of tight ends and a lot of wide receivers that are really good. So that's kind of where I am. I'm back and forth on the whole thing. I don't want to take away DeShone Kizer's growth just to make a locker room and fan favorite happy.
I agree.
Well, yeah, I mostly agree with what you said, Steve, but I will say that when you speak of red zone, and yes, DeShone had some issues. However, we saw him run quite a few in on his own. So I think one negates the other a little bit because I think that may be kind of a toss-up between the two. I do think that Malik Zaire is a bigger – obviously, he's a bigger body. I think he can run more – as a running back if he has to, where I think DeShone relies on edge protection, getting outside and going in untouched rather than – he slipped over the end zone, got the one. Yeah, I know that. But I think as far as – if you want to put a quarterback in the red zone who can run it in tough, then you go with Malik. But I just don't know if there's enough separation that you can really play both quarterbacks. If Brian Kelly's saying, hey, we're going to have one guy, then I think you have to start thinking about some other things. Brandon Wimbush, this kid is ultra-talented. We don't even know what he can do yet, but we've seen glimpses. So I think maybe in the bigger picture, you got to start thinking about what happens down the line. Yeah, see how I did that. And then you have, you got Brandon Winbush. Is he going to transfer or go somewhere else? Because the kid's got talent. I'm sure people would want to pick him up if they could. So that's kind of where I kind of am looking more towards the Brandon Winbush situation than anything else, I guess, which is probably short-sighted.
I mean, I think I feel like Winbush, I mean, obviously the ceiling's really high for him too, obviously. I think the situation in that quarterback room that Mike Sanford has is pretty awesome for him.
Well, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I don't know. I'm a little indifferent on too. Like, I do feel like there's got to be somehow some way to use Malik Zaire, but I 100% agree with Steve. Like, don't fault Kaiser's growth, because I do feel like too, I mean, there were people this year alone that were talking about, like, DeBrazan Kaiser is one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. And, I mean, that Temple game, he was unbelievable in that Temple game, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, there's not many NFL quarterbacks doing what DeShone Kizer's doing on the football field right now. Obviously, I know he's not going against Luke Kuechly and guys like that right now. But still, you know, you're seeing that skill set. You're seeing that skill level there. And that's something that really makes this a hell of a lot more interesting than past years.
Very true. Yeah. Sometimes controversy is a good thing to have.
You remember, what was it? We're talking now 4 years ago. We're talking Tommy Rees versus Andrew Hendricks versus Everett Golson. And
yeah,
there was somebody else in there. Luke Massa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, man. Times have changed. Because I think we have three guys that are, I think that Malik Zaire in the right situation is the top 20 quarterback in college football. And I think Brandon Winbush in the right situation is the top five. Is Notre Dame going to end up being that right situation at the certain time? I sure as hell hope so.
I do too.
Well,
man.
I don't think Winbush is going to go anywhere. I mean, my honest opinion, because I think that, depending on how the cards fall, I think that Winbush knows that if they can redshirt him this year, he's going to have years of eligibility, and he's going to be right in a situation where I think Brian Kelly has really wanted this football program to be. You've got a kid with not just a cannon, the kid's got a howitzer. Boom. Can throw the ball over the yard accurately, and he's big, tall, and fast. And I think that he knows that in Brian Kelly's system, eventually, he could be a top five quarterback in the nation. Now, if an opportunity presents itself before that, I could understand him going, but that's my thought.
I don't know, man. It's going to be fun these next couple years for sure with this whole thing. Especially now that Phil Jurkovich has committed to Notre Dame too, who's going to be the top quarterback in two seasons. So, yeah, it's going to be fun, right?
We'll put no stock into that until he signs his LOI, and even then I don't put too much trust in it.
Yeah, Eddie Vanderdis totally agrees with that statement.
Yeah.
So, you guys, before we get out of here, we're going to close out this week's edition of the show. While all this has been really good news, has been going on, you know, we got to go ahead and kind of send our best wishes, obviously, to the family of Greg Bryant and his friends after the unfortunate passing there. Yeah, make sure we don't touch on that. While we were gone, unfortunately, we did hear about Greg's tragic loss of his life there. So, you know, best regards to his family, his friends, and everyone out there.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate. This kid, he transferred from Notre Dame. He had a bright future ahead of him. By all accounts, he was, doing the right things, making the right moves, and getting ready to get back in school and play football for UAB. So, and I know that, to the UAB family, if you're listening at all, we obviously, feel for you too, because that kid was going to be the anchor of a very new reinstated football team. So, yeah. Best wishes and prayers to the family to this tragic time. It's horrible to see a wife go that young.
Yeah, I mean, I'll certainly throw my thing in there. You hear a lot about things about his time at Notre Dame, how welcome and embracing he was, not just the football players and his former teammates, but, you know, regular students and everyone else on campus. And he was a guy that seemed to be able to get along with anyone and everyone, but ultimately, made some really tough and poor choices on and off the field, and was just it's a tough way to know he went out knowing that there was a lot more he could have accomplished as a football player and as a human. So, you know, yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, Tim. I certainly wanted to make sure that's something we touched on. It's the other side of football is that, you know, there's life and there's a real world out there, and sometimes it's dangerous, and you got to put yourself in situations that, you know, try and limit that, and it's tough to hear.
Absolutely. So yeah, we want to make sure we touch on that before we get out of here. But I think it's a good time we can go close out this week's edition of Down the Line, the new Indy Nation Network. Thanks again to everyone for tuning in each and every week and really giving us the time. And as we get ready to start this next season, really looking forward to it. Be sure, you know, we're going to try to get this back on track and do this a little more consistent as we get ready for year six of the TNNDN Network program. So be sure to check us on iTunes by searching TNNDN. Catch all of our shows there. Like us on Facebook. Again, TNNDN. All that, we're going to bring it all to you. Everyone enjoy the rest of the week, and go Irish.
Go Irish.
Go Irish.
Outlined against a blue-gray sky, the horsemen ride again. Yes, Grantland, see the Irish shine, the time has come to win. In the bowl of ground, the spirits stir, and you feel a shiver when the horsemen herd comes thundering by, and the Irish rise again.